Hey guys, today I'm going to talk about Shantae. Specifically, I'm only be covering the games I've actually played, which are the first three. And I might cover the other ones, the sequels in another video, but right now let's just talk about the main sort of series. This is a very interesting series right off the bat because the very first game, Shantae, was almost an indie game, and it came out near the end of the Game Boy Color's lifespan. So, in a lot of cases with these kind of late games on consoles or, handhelds even, essentially they usually push the hardware and software of the game quite far, and usually very impressive for their time. I know one of the late games on the PS2 was Rule of Rose, and its CG cutscenes are almost as good as PS4 graphics. Just the absolute artwork and passion that goes into it is really interesting. And then the whole life cycle kind of restarts, which is really interesting. But anyway, so Shantae originally was a late game on the Game Boy Color, and then you had Shantae Risky's Revenge on the DS, and then you finally had Shantae the Pirate's Curse. And I believe this was downloadable content for the 3DS, or at least the way I actually played all of these games is on my 3DS. They're basically on the classic system or console, whatever it is. But anyway, the game, Shantae. So this was, it's a very fun, very cute, kind of platformer. I think a lot of early game developers definitely think about making a game like this, a very kind of Mario-ish kind of clone, like a very simple 2D platformer. But Shantae was kind of like really in that vibe. I think the creator's name is Matt Bozon, I believe. And you can just really tell that this guy is very passionate about what he does. The games themselves, how actually are they? Well, they're certainly not bad, and they're good, but they're not great. They don't really fit that sweet spot of being a really truly amazing game, but the games themselves are actually rather fun and agreeable. For a very basic 2D, action adventure game, it's pretty much one of the better ones you can play. And the design of everything else about the games is very iconic. Everything from Shantae's design to the gimmicks of her dancing abilities, the fact she can turn into different animals that each have different powers that helps you traverse the world is there's something very classic about it. This is definitely something inspired by old school 2D platformers while all still being itself at the same time. So Shantae herself, what is the story about? Shantae is a guardian genie of a town called Scuttletown, and it might have been called something different in the first game, I forget, but basically she is tasked with defending, this area, and essentially, things go awry. What happens is her uncle Mimic is this engineer, and he's creating this, steam-powered engine, and it's kind of this technology that the pirate Risky Boots comes and basically steals and takes away. And so this is kind of the incentive for the beginning of the game, and also Shantae finding about her past, because her mother was a genie who lives in the spirit world, while her father's kind of undisclosed as to exactly what his origins were. There are other characters in the story like Bolo, who is the one of the first male protagonists you meet, who is kind of like a side character, and also the girl with the eagle, whose name I forget just now, and there's also Roddy Tops, who is a zombie from the Zombieland. There's always been a zombie level in these games, which is always a funny thing. It's very kind of tropey and silly, and again, very much in the essence of classic 2D, adventure games. Like, I could see this game coming out, in the early 90s and not being weird or out of place at all. It's very much in that aesthetic of interesting, weird characters with a fun background and engaging gameplay. And so throughout the course of the story, again, the story is like, it's there. It's not super important, but it's serviceable, It feels very appropriate for a game of this scope and size. So Shantae basically goes on this quest. She has to, get four keys or four things. I honestly don't even remember what you actually have to get, but there are like separate areas of the map where you travel to and you basically you know, get the items you need, kind of Zelda-like. It's kind of a mixture of like Mario and Zelda, honestly. To create this experience where you're going from place to place, finding all the stuff that you need, and then, you know, taking it to the final boss. Somewhat similarly or unsimilar, though, the structure is a little bit different in that it does not have a distinct Zelda-style structure. You know, you might get a lot of items you need to progress or beat the boss outside of the actual dungeon itself. And, of course, this kind of changes what these powers are. In the original Shantae game, there are four different animals that you can transform to, each one of them with an upgradable superpower, like, you know, being able to down smash as an elephant through, you know, breakable walls, thus letting you navigate, you know, through the dungeon to the final boss and, you know, things like that. Risky's Revenge, Risky's Revenge I played a while ago, I don't actually remember, but in the Pirate's Curse, the third game, the whole gimmick is actually that Risky essentially there's this curse upon her, and the Pirate Lord or Pirate King is essentially coming back, who is this big, you know, this big bag enemy, and basically he's going to destroy the whole land, and so Risky actually comes to you for help. And in that game, you have Risky's four items that help you basically navigate the world and take on the bosses, which is kind of cool. So that's very, on theme. But from the very beginning of the series, Risky Boots has always been the main antagonist to Shantae. So it's always been a genie versus a pirate. The one thing I really love about Shantae is that she has a very unique attack pattern, or at least attack in general, is that even though she's a genie, she uses her hair to attack. There are certain magical items you can get, like fireballs and exploding clouds and lightning and these rotating balls that go around you. But all of those are kind of treated as items that you can use via magic meter or a limited use. But they're not tied to Shantae herself. So it's kind of implied that Shantae, like her magic powers, as we later found out, at least in the sequel, that Shantae is actually a half genie. And so at the end of the second game, she actually, I believe, loses her genie powers and to this magic lamp. And so she kind of becomes a regular-ish kind of girl, but she still has her hair powers. But she can basically turn her hair into a whip, which I just think is a really cool concept. Like, if I had to do a 2D action game, it'd be, you know, punching or kicking or a sword. But no, she uses her hair. That's just, I don't know. I've never seen something like that. It's really creative. The only thing you can think of is Bayonetta, but Bayonetta uses her hair as demons or like as a suit, but not technically as a weapon, which I think, you know, this game kind of does really creatively. I think it's a really cool gimmick. Also, Shantae's design is, I have to speak about it. It's super simple, using, you know, very clear colors and tones. And, you know, the purple and red is a little bit of a odd design that not a lot of people go with. And, you know, it definitely has a pseudo anime influence, becomes much more apparent as the games go on. But it's a very, very cute and enjoyable game. And the sprite animations are really, as we would call it, say, soulful. They're just full of life. And when she dances from side to side, you can tell that there's a lot of personality. And seeing the original game, actually, it's hard to imagine this as a Game Boy Color game because there's just so much. I think the animations are just really fluid, and there's a lot of personality in the character, and there's a lot of depth and love put into creating this kind of world and game. It's kind of funny, as time has gone on, there are things that have obviously changed in the series. So one thing at the beginning series is that Shantae could dance by pressing the X or Y button or whatever. And basically, depending on the inputs from the D-pad, he would do a different dance move, and you use that to essentially transform into different animals or to eventually warp around the world. The way warping works is that you'll be in an area and you'll find these four octopi, they're octopi, and you bring them to the mother octopus in the local town, and once you find all of them in the overworld or in dungeons, you'll be taught a dance that allows you to teleport to that area. There's also a lot of hidden dances, things that like refill hearts and turn you into other kind of joke characters. So there's a lot of fun being done with it as well. And the dancing kind of acts as a little funny, like a cheat code thing, technically, or rather I could see it working like that in the future of the game series. But again, as I was saying, it did change. One big thing that is in the original that they obviously kind of, I guess, had to sort of take out as a second thought is that, you know, one of the mini games is that you also have this rhythm mini game in the main town where you basically have to hit the inputs and you do a little dance on stage. And it's just the normal inputs you have out in the field. But when you do the inputs successfully, people throw money up on the stage. So it's very much, you know, this dance parlor is and the connotations associated with it kind of realized, you know, there might be actually be children playing this game, and maybe that kind of insinuation is a little bit too risque. So they kept the dancing for the most part, but they removed that one mini game. but I do think it's funny. I kind of wish it did come back because it was fun to do. Again, the controls are very simple. You know, you press A to jump and B to whip your hair, and you know, it's just a forward horizontal attack. In the original game, you do get some upgrades at a shop where basically you can do hold the attack button, or if you click down while you're in the air, you'll do a little downward kick kind of thing. But honestly, they are very not useful at all, considering the charge time and time it has to take. It's still kind of archaic when, you know, one of the main upgrades you get through these different games is that the speed and strength, of course, but really the speed of the hair whip attack is upgraded to the point where it's almost like a machine gun, to the point where it's like you don't really need to use any other move, frankly, because it's just so effective. Something they added in the Pirate's Curse is you now have a damage counter above your head, so you can now tell exactly how much damage you're doing to the enemy, probably because there's a lot of different weapons you can use in the third game. The way that most of the items work is that you would have to pause the game and equip it in a submenu, and then essentially that would be mapped to the item button, and then you'd use that item. These things, again, would be limited use health items or special attacks. There's fireballs, rotating balls, projectiles, and so on. And Risky's, in the original game, it's interesting. You could turn into a monkey. That was the first one you got, which allowed you to climb up walls and also dash around. It's very mobile, but you obviously did not have a lot of attack or range. The second one you got was an elephant, which was massive, but your attack cooldown window wasn't very good, but it was a lot of fun to use and kind of just plow through very weak enemies. And then two odd ones that I haven't really seen return to the series is one was a spider that allowed you to climb up walls. So you had this cool 1.5D effect, or 2.5D effect rather, where you could, you know, sort of go up the walls across chasms. And you could shoot spider webs out of the spider. And then the final sort of mobility one in the original was a harpy, which was kind of cool. And you could basically fly around the level. So each one had an increased degree of travel, essentially. And in the future games, a lot of that is stripped away, where they just give Shantae different powers that allow her to traverse, so she doesn't have to transform into all these different creatures. The characterization is kind of hard to come by. Like, the character screens and dialogue are kind of very limited in the first game, but by Risky's Revenge, it really comes into its own. There's a lot of very cool things that are being done, even technologically wise. One thing I thought was really cool is that in the main hub area, you would actually click up to go to a different part of town. It would kind of do this fade out effect, like a 2.5D thing, which is, I thought, really cool and really advanced, even for like the DS kind of era. But yeah, the dialogue and characterization really kind of start shining in Risky's Revenge. There's definitely a lot of references to certain like meme culture or internet jokes or stuff without it being unbearing or crazy. It definitely has a quirky thing in the series where, you know, you have to borrow items like library cards or court orders and sort of, you know, mundane things like this to, you know, get the job done. And that kind of humor really starts coming out in Risky's Revenge. It's not too distracting, and I think it's pretty appropriate, again, for this kind of game. Again, you can kind of tell there's definitely like an anime you know, inspired style to this game. A lot of the characters have certain designs, but without making it too animated, it does feel like you're in this fake Middle Eastern setting, just with the quirk characters are just a little bit quirky and just a little bit stylized, and I think it's just the right amount. Of course, I love Shantae's sprite, the way she dances and moves. There's so many, it's such a fluid framed character that, you know, you love it. There's also some big staples of the series. So you have hearts that are your health, magic vials that are your magic. There's an old man who records your save data throughout every single game you play. And so the world is divided into basically hub worlds or towns, and you basically, everything's 2D, so you go from side to side to get to place to place, unless you have fast travel. The one thing I do have to say about the first game compared to the other ones is that the overworld is absolutely brutal. I probably, you know, after venturing outside the town, I probably died, at least like a dozen times, probably. It is just brutal, and it has this unique function in the first game where it actually can turn to night. And when the sun goes down, essentially, the music changes to a very scary tone, and everything gets a lot more difficult. There's a lot more enemies, they're very hard, etc., etc., stuff like that. The currency system in this game is very similar to Zelda. Instead of rupees, they are gems or something? I forget, but you basically, you know, kill enemies, find them, and you can basically collect them and use them to spend them on items or upgrades to Shantae herself. Another thing I should mention is the music in this game is very entertaining. It definitely has a pretty good soundtrack that's very iconic. It keeps that Middle Eastern, you know, kind of Arabian Nights kind of vibe while keeping kind of upbeat and, you know, 8-bit. You know, this person really did have a great vision for this character who's kind of, you know, again, Arabian Nights inspired, but without being, I don't know, too restrictive or too realistic, for lack of a better word. It's still very much in an abstract way, which is a lot of fun. The first game is divided into basically the main town, Scuttletown, then Watertown, which is where you find usually the second protagonist or side character. The third town was the zombie themed one, and the fourth one is Bandit Town, which is where Risky Boots is from. And so those kind of themes kind of repeat throughout the course of the series. Again, what's nice about Shantae, it doesn't take itself too seriously, but seriously enough that there are serious scenes where Shantae finds about, you know, the background of her mother, what her origins are, you know, trying to save Risky Boots despite, you know, everything they've been through. So all around, it's a well-rounded game, but on the whole, how do I feel about the series in general? It's okay, but it's not anything super amazing. I never finished a Shantae game and said, oh wow, I'm so glad I did that. It's you know, it's a Nintendo adjacent, Nintendo friendly kind of game, and that's kind of nice if, you know, if you like that kind of style of game and aesthetic. But it's nothing super amazing. Shantae, each game is good, but there's never been a Shantae game that was great, in my view. Something I do enjoy, though, about the games is that they really don't mind, how do I say this? You know, I mean, they don't shy away from making their characters attractive and, you know, playing a little around a little bit with fan service. In the sense that there's one level in The Pirate's Curse where, you know, they all get captured, all the main female characters, and they're all put in Princess Leia-esque costumes, and they all have to kind of escape together. And it's all very fun and lighthearted, and not really a super big deal at all. But yeah, the whole tone of the game is very fun and lighthearted, and a little bit serious sometimes. But again, I kind of wish maybe it was a little bit more serious, or perhaps a little bit more interesting, because the game itself, or the games itself, they're okay, but they don't, you know, they don't wow me. They don't amaze me. They're kind of like, oh, that was a good platformer. And it is a good platformer. It reminds me of games like Shovel Knight or maybe Hollow Knight, which are like, oh yeah, this is trying to be that other thing, or this is, you know, good. But I've always kind of had higher expectations for Shantae games, and I've just never really felt that. It's kind of like, oh yeah, you know, these are fine. I know one thing that I don't know why it stands out in my mind, but one of the silliest, weirdest moments in this game is when there's this one island that you travel to with Risky Boots, and there's a giant waterfall, and it's implied it is called Saliva Island, so all the water on the island comes from the saliva of this giant creature or something. I forgot. It was just a weird, a weird, funny thing. Something else is I should probably look this up, but there's also Monster Boy and the something something. It was this other game that looked remarkably similar to Shantae and also used the same mechanics as transforming into animals in order to navigate puzzles and stuff like that. I'm not sure if it's by the same creator, because if not, it's like extremely just a total ripoff. WayForward has also made some other games like Mighty Switch Force, and which I've also played, and also Mighty Milky Way. Those were cool games. I definitely played them, in the past. And the cool thing about Mighty Milky Way that really attracted me or interested me was the fact, essentially, that the main theme was using Miku and Vocaloid software as a song. And back then, I don't want to say 2010s or roughly, that was still a very new thing. Now you'll kind of see Miku being used in other certain, usually indie games, nothing mainstream, but things like Turnip Boy Robs a Bank. She was in the end song there, so she pops up here and again. But now it's kind of like, I don't know, it's just not as interesting since the timing of it is just kind of old. There's Miku, that's nice to see her. But back then it was kind of a bigger deal. Both Mighty Milky Way and Mighty Switch Force are okay games. They're very much minigame-esque games. They're very much okay. And yet despite that, because of the perhaps strong art direction and the strong music of these games, they've actually outlived the games themselves. Mighty Switch Force honestly is not very fun. I liked Mighty Milky Way better, but it's a very simple mechanic game where basically you're standing on a planet and you click that planet to jump off and you kind of float into zero gravity and you have to navigate from planet to planet. And the whole big twist at the end, minor spoilers, is that the last planet you land on is Earth and you jump off it and it explodes. And that's the big twist, is that you were the villain all along. You're an evil French alien. Oh, I forgot. What's her name? Luna from Mighty Milky Way is actually a French alien, not just a normal alien, but she's also French. Anyway, I don't know. These games have a lot of creativity, but again, I can never really give them anything above a 7, if you know what I mean. There's nothing here that wows me. It's like, oh, this was fun, that was cool, that was nice. Shantae's a well-designed character. She has her own theme, her own gimmick, her own essence, everything. But in terms of gameplay, there's nothing really revolutionary or interesting here. It's just kind of like, someone took what they learned by watching every other game and like making it here and remaking it here. And that's fine. But I kind of was left wanting more from the series in general. And now that I'm doing this review, I'm kind of thinking maybe I might go back and play the new ones. I kind of fell off the train after the third game because I'm just used to games kind of completing in trilogies and threes. And then it's like, okay, you're going to reinvent the character and do a new thing. But they did that with, what was it? The next one was Half Genie Hero and the Seven Sirens. And I just thought, okay, I can't tell the difference between either of these games mechanically or artistically. So I was just super confused by exactly what I'm supposed to feel or think, about these sequels, that, they don't seem to be, how do I say, super important or super, differentiated in any way. It's not like, like Pirate's Curse, like, oh, Risky Boots is now your ally and you have to use her own items to actually help her out. Like, that's a very distinct theme. While, Half Genie Hero and Seven Sirens feel like this is just another Shantae game that's just doing the same thing. And I'm looking at it trying to figure out, okay, what's the catch or the deal, or like why is this different or an evolved idea of the previous ones? And I just look at them and don't have anything. I look at gameplay, I'm like, yep, that looks the same. The art direction is a little bit different. It's a lot more I don't want to say anime because it's in a way less anime. It's more like Western style animation, at least in Seven Sirens. Well, I mean, actually, ironically, as I say that, I think the Seven Sirens intro was actually done by Studio Trigger or something, or it looks exactly like Studio Trigger, which is pretty crazy. Yeah, no, I always appreciated, again, this game, how it just did cute anime girls, like, unapologetically. It just was like, yep, they're hot. And, you know, and it's a kind of hotness that is just appreciated, I guess. That being said, of course, though, the writing's fairly good, and it's fairly okay. But yeah, and I'm thinking now I might want to check out the other titles to see if there's anything, you know, worthwhile there. I mean, unfortunately, from, like, my perspective, they seem like just another 7 out of 10 game, but maybe I might be wrong, but I'm kind of... at least I'm interested enough to give them a try, which I can say is at least a good sign that these games have left a good impression on me in the past to the extent where I'd be willing to try a sequel. Anyway, with all that being said, guys, I think that's kind of a pretty good summary of the Shantae and how I feel about it. I guess I'll see you guys later. And yeah, pick up this cute half-genie hero anytime you feel the need. Bye, guys.